Tech Gaming listeners interested in hearing top representatives from Electronic Arts, Ubisoft, Disney Interactive, Activision Blizzard, and dozens of the industry's leading firms are invited to attend Digital Wire Media's upcoming game conference, which will be held on April 18th and 19th in Hollywood, California. Topics such as what's next in console gaming, as well as a roundtable discussion exploring the impact of gaming awards, are just two of the topics on the agenda. Please head over to dmwgames.com to view the full agenda. Listeners are encouraged to use code SRADIUS, that's S-R-A-D-I-U-S, to save 10% off the registration fees. You're listening to the Tech Gaming Podcast, episode 12-7. I am your host, Robert Desert Eagle Allen. With me today is no other but Mr. Eric, that's me, Blue Swim.
You know, I go away for one episode, thanks to the Taco Bells, and I come back and we already have a new podcast co-host? Wait a minute, and her name is Say?
She's going to kill you. It's Sai.
Oh, it's Sai?
There goes that intro. Let me introduce my other co-host, who can get names right, Mr. Jeremy, random Skype messenger, Lamont.
Oh my god, I thought I was Sean Nola. I got this wrong too.
Sean was dead.
That's right, our dearly departed Sean.
And Paul. Not with us tonight is Sage Simrage Morris Green, until we can work out scheduling difficulties.
And she's dead.
Why is everyone dying off?
I don't know.
Agatha Christie novel?
Are we getting towards the end of the series?
I'm more of a Columbo man. Deagle, I'd like to ask you one more question, if it wouldn't be too much trouble.
That was pretty good.
It wasn't bad. I did the lazy eye thing.
Did you? Doesn't work on the audio podcast.
No, it doesn't really.
But you know what does work is impressions. So I want to kick things off talking about Go Home Dinosaurs. Didn't we talk about that, Jeremy?
Briefly, yes, we did.
Yeah, so a little bit more than brief. One of the things I always come back to, I always think, is the tower defense genre is dead. And then there's some kind of little wrinkle that reinvigorates it for me. For toy soldiers, for, what was it, Trenched or Iron Brigade? I forgot which one.
It was Trenched and then Iron Brigade.
Iron Brigade, okay. Whatever.
And then there was... Fine
is calling it these days.
Orcs Must Die, and then there was Sanctum for the PC, and then there was all kinds
of stuff. Ants versus Zombies?
So toy soldiers, Iron Brigade, they added you could control offensive devices. Ratchet and Clank, Full Frontal Assault. They added co-op, and Anomaly. They turned the whole genre upside down, making us the invaders. And Firehose Games, their title, Go Home Dinosaurs, adds another few new wrinkles, actually, which is enough to rekindle my interest in the tower defense game. And as I mentioned, as we mentioned earlier on a previous podcast, the game's fiction is really quirky. These gophers are having a barbecue, probably because they discovered the benefits of a carnivore diet, and likely, I think, fearing extinction from a lack of protein. The old dinosaurs, they're on the attack, so you have brontos and pterodactyls, whatever they call the dinosaurs these days, another reference to an older podcast. They follow these pre-made tracks that end in a barbecue. And at the start of each round, you create, much like Plants vs. Zombies, a hand comprised of an increasing number of cards. You start off 3, 4, and then 5. And like PVZ, your currency is produced by plants. In this case, they're coconut trees that sprout, and you collect the fruit by moving your little gopher. And this is where things get interesting, in the placement of the defenses. Now, you can move your protagonist gopher around the grid-based battlefield, and he'll pelt passersby with I don't know what he's throwing at him, his nuts. you can use the coconuts that you gather to acquire additional armaments, but these must fit in to the battlefield almost like Tetris shapes. And there's this translucent overlay that shows not only the size of the shapes, but also the area of effect. So there's never any guesswork. And so in execution, Go Home Dinosaurs, it feels like a little bit more of a puzzle in the tower defense genre is you learn to kind of maximize and really make your arsenal as efficient as possible. For me, that's really rewarding. I like that a lot, and it's bolstered by this really kind of cutesy art style, an animation that's right out of the PopCap playbook, and really often when games do the pop culture references, I kind of smirk. I don't really laugh, but these ones are really pretty funny and definitely enough to justify the $8 to $10 price range that the game is selling for on Steam. So if there's not a full review up by now, there should be one very soon on the site. But definitely dig it. Very cute, quite fun, casual game.
Now, looking at the screenshots, because I haven't actually played this myself, it looks like it's kind of a grid. I don't know if it's just the look or if it's actually organized into grids.
Yes, it is. The whole battlefield is a grid.
I see. And so
which I love.
Are there dynamic pathways for the dinosaurs to be taking, or is it pretty, I mean, you said it's like a puzzle, so does that just mean there's just kind of the one path that they take through?
Yes. Unlike some, and I got kind of tired of the one, I think it was Field Runners that broke me, where because there is an optimal path that you make, and it's almost like you follow this maze-like pattern to make the path the longest. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So doing that repeatedly, once you know that there is a systematic way to create the longest path so you can efficiently kill the stream of monsters coming, once you've kind of realized that, it kind of takes the fun. I know Field Runners, they throw out, you know, multiple entrances and they try to limit, but you still, you know, have an understanding of the goal you need to complete there.
Yeah, I have to admit, that was one thing that even going all the way back to, like, Pixel Junk Monsters, mm-hmm. you know, once I realized that there was one way to do this, and I just did not have the patience to figure out which, you know, exactly what spot I needed to mm-hmm. put exactly what kind of tower, it kind of lost its luster a little bit. I mean, you can still compete, but you can't, like, dominate the game unless you really...
Yeah, get those, rainbows?
The rainbows, well, I mean, it's basically if you get a perfect score, I guess. Mm-hmm. Like, you, and you know, the rhythm of the different kinds of monsters coming in is just so mm-hmm. that you have to space your towers apart, you know, at just the right intervals, because they have just the repeat fire rate, that sort of thing. Is it similar in this case? I mean, is it just that you're basically not gonna get all the dinosaurs unless you specifically, like, figure out the...
It's a little bit more relaxed, maybe even open-ended, because it does allow you to choose your own... Well, I guess Pixel Junk did, because you could choose where to upgrade what weapons.
Yeah, like do your little dance.
So yeah, it's very similar. No, not necessarily the dance, but remember you'd go back to your fort, and then you could pick what technologies you want?
Oh yeah, right.
In the way that you do that. And I always thought, with Pixel Junk, there was a certain way, whether it's fire, whether it was, I forgot what it was, but ice, but there was, you know, a definite pattern there. So
Right.
But this one's a little looser, a little bit more fun. With Pixel Junk, I was a little tense because I didn't want any of them to kind of scoot by.
I enjoyed Pixel Junk Monsters a lot until I saw other people really actually playing it, and then I was super discouraged. I just kind of stopped. I'm like, there's no way. Because either you're going to look at a video of someone doing it and be like, okay, put this here, okay, put that there, all right. You know, either you're going to do that, or you're going to, like, trial and error and find exactly the spot. And once I saw other people really playing the game and getting perfect runs...
That ruined it.
It kind of did. It kind of did ruin it for me, yeah.
So last episode, I promised people that I'd play the wildest or... most mundane sim that listeners could come up with, and
yes.
A lot of people put some things. Thank you guys, but sadly that didn't happen. And I'll still take suggestions for the next show. But one thing
Yay.
I did, yes, I did play a simulation.
I'm filling in for the voice of the
the crowd.
Yeah.
I did play some Tiger Woods PGA Tour 14, which I did review, but I played it with Kinect on simulation difficulty, which is the new challenge level that removes most of the assists, things like ball spin. You can spin your balls in the air, seeing the green lie, wind speed, all that.
You have to keep your mistress a secret from your wife, and
yes, always.
Like, while maintaining your sponsorship deals with.
Oh, you went there, Jeremy.
I mean, simulate. I mean, you were like hardcore Tiger Woods simulator.
Till you crash the SUV on the fire hydrant.
Yes, exactly. That's
as you're texting here. Oh, you gosh, you lured me in.
What about having, like, the second biggest yacht in the marina?
What about having your ex-wife demolish your house just because she can? Because she's so.
You can't see it, but I'm making that really disappointed Tiger Woods face right now.
That's the SimCity link. Anyway, One thing, another thing you can't do is you can't zoom in on the course, so you really have to know. God, here we go. You guys are gonna laugh every hole, like hands. or trust
Tiger.
Yes. So anyway, let me start off with menu navigation with Kinect. It is kind of a clusterfuck. I move my
the same as always.
Surprise!
Where
no, so sometimes I'm not gonna lump it all together and say it's always bad. There's some of the exercise games that do it well. What was Ubisoft's one? I have to turn around here. The Nike Fitness one wasn't too bad, but anyway, I move my right hand to move the menu bar up and down, but selecting things was kind of a no-go. So I bend over to pick up the controller, and the Kinect is watching my hand drop, and so then I'm simultaneously reading the stick, and my hand position was just kind of a mess. So I spent more time in the menu than on the first two holes combined. So some of the basics are cool. You crouch to check, the ball eye. You put your left hand over your eyes if you're shielding from the sun to kind of look down the hole. Kinect Sports did that, so nothing revolutionary. You put your hands together. That readies your shot. Now, the big stickler here is shot aiming. And so what you have to do is extend your arm towards the Kinect, towards the TV. You make this fist, you hold it for 3 seconds, then you move your arm around. It's kind of janky. You open your fist, and you hope the cursor didn't move. So not
kinda
very
like
fun.
You're pointing out a home run in your Babe Ruth.
I always wondered. Who used to do Babe Ruth
didn't kind of extend it out there and shake it and wiggle it ever so bit, and then moved around and get frustrated and make a big frown. He just called a shot and put it.
Who was it who always used to like in the NBA who used to like rub his chin or something before he took a free throw? Or like Karl Malone or something like that, or I'm just saying I always wondered what Tiger Woods was doing out there, on the green, like holding his hand out, closing his fists, and like
that maneuver. Now
this simulation mode, I'm starting to really get it now. I think
that was the simulation. So anyway,
actually, what this reminds me of is Steel Battalion. Did you ever do the? I did not, but I have heard.
I bought it. I haven't opened it up yet, but
really, you should do that. I think the listeners want to hear this for next week. So that's it. You've got it. You've admitted you have it in your house. So that's what's going to be next week.
Okay. So yes, I promise, Steel Battalion. When you swing, you do it facing the TV, which felt kind of weird because my LPGA avatar, she was oriented sideways. Laughs. What's going on?
I just had a little clear in my throat.
Anyway, swinging big is what the Kinect does well. Most of the time, I didn't shank the ball, but when I did, it really didn't give me any coaching, which was a little frustrating. So I was in the Kraft Nabisco Classic, and I finished 9 over par, which I thought was pretty decent, but didn't bring me home any winnings or a lifetime supply of crackers. Just to see if it was just my own suckitude or the Kinect. I replayed the event with the stick, and drum roll, Jeremy. Got 200 par for a third place finish.
Not bad.
Yes. So lifetime supply of cheese and crackers. So that was
for everyone.
I had heard that the combination of the sim mode with Kinect was difficult, and I think it is only because of the device itself. That's it. That was my exercise in Tiger Woods. And someone had asked me if I had some problems with Tiger Woods freezing up and crashing. Yes, I did. Crashed twice on me. Oh, and one
right
time.
Right into a fire hydrant.
Yeah. And one time, amidst the LPGA Tour, I got dropped from Xbox Live, and it booted me out of the whole tournament. Fuck was up with that? Yes. I was so mad.
It is EA after all.
I was 4 under par at that one.
That's like that one time that Tiger was out on the green and like started clutching his chest and like fell over and then disappeared. Started out back in the club again. It was kind of messed up.
Jeremy's Tiger fantasies continues.
I'm just saying it's simulation, but this better be like true to life.
Okay. All these things. I'm thinking of Fred Sanford grabbing his chest, saying it's the big one. Talking about Ann Astor.
Tiger Woods ran out of Pokemon. He fainted and returned to Pokemon Center or clubhouse.
What was his name, Jeremy? What was his
Lamont.
Son's? Yes. Yeah.
You thought I didn't know that. You guys
of
know
course
how
you
I
know that.
That.
Damn
of
last
course
name.
I know that. Yeah, I know every. That's the thing. Lamonts, they all know each other. Whether it's their first or last name, we all have this little club. Lamont
Does
Cranston.
This mean the Sanford and Son theme is going to be the theme for this episode?
if there is like chip a chip-tune version of
yes.
that.
Wah, 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 wah.
God damn it. Stop reading my mind. Last thing I want to talk about, WRC FIA World Championship 3. Didn't spend too much time. It's published by Namco Bandai and developed by Milestone. And I bring this up because it feels like it is running on the FIM Motocross World Championship engine. I reviewed that last month. That was that kind of arcadey motocross game. And, you know, of course, shared the same talent and I'm pretty sure the same engine. Now here's the thing. Codemasters Dirt was pretty much the king of rally. And I guess in trying to reach more of a global audience, the game left behind Rally out almost completely. That said, the original Dirt and the sequel are still this generation's Rally games of choice. Great handling model. They look great. But the one thing for me is they forced players to drive these big dumb trucks in Baja California. I don't want to do that. I want to race the little squirrely Mitsubishis. So MRC3 allows me to drive those small little cars. It's kind of a step down. There are multiple difficulties levels, but what they do is they turn off the assist and seem to be a little bit more lenient in the time for each run. The graphics are a step down, definitely, from Dirt, and the physics handling is simplified, even on the elevated settings. I competed in about seven or eight races in the career mode. And one thing, like Milestone does, authentic racers, authentic cars, you know, they're a stickler for authenticity. But for me, if you're a hardcore kind of sim nut, just the handling isn't quite there. With that, I'm still having a little bit of fun with the game. It's not perfect. Don't know how much it's selling for, but hopefully it would be in the under $40 price range right now. But expect a full review of that one in the immediate future. So that is a WRC FIA Rally World Rally Championship 3, which is also on the Vita. No Xbox 360 version.
Strange. Oh, I was going to say, I'm waiting for the Kinect simulator mode. Yeah, you know, the mode.
Oh, God.
Like,
where I throw my Kinect out the window. Oh, yeah. It's the most robotic assistant ever.
Really?
Oh, my God. Yeah, it makes a Cigarella Championship seem like it is from the future.
Wow. Yes.
Medium right ahead.
I love that guy. He was so unenthusiastic. Hairpin, right ahead.
Is that different than the one that's on the new platforms, that's on PlayStation Network and Xbox Live?
Yeah, that was...
Because that guy sounds... I was going to say, that guy sounds moderately excited.
He does. He does. He's got some Viagra running through his... Viagra and Red Bull combination running through
his... Oh, my God.
Yes. Wait. You didn't get the memo? I require you guys to take that before the show.
You know what?
Well, I don't need any Viagra.
I was going to say, it's been more than 3 hours, but I'm all natural.
Oh, God. TMI, guys. Let's turn this show around right now. Jeremy, give me some impressions.
All right. I have one, actually, that I wasn't going to talk about, but since you mentioned having such a great time playing Tiger Woods Simulator Mode on Kinect, I just want to say I've been getting back into Hot Shots Golf World Invitational on the Vita. Yes. They released an update just recently that allowed kind of a play-by-mail sort of mode, and it's pure fun all the time. I'm not worrying about controls. I'm not worrying about Tiger Woods. I've got an anime girl in a skirt, and we're rocking it. I mean, we're just...
If that game was not so atrociously difficult,
what?
I would spend the whole dollar and the 450 megabyte download or whatever, and I would so totally buy Cat.
It's good. You should play it, dude. It's fun. And you know what?
I've got it. It's been a royal pain in the ass. It's like after you get up to like I think it's like silver or bronze is in the challenge mode, it's like unbe-fucking-lievably difficult.
Because the AI? The CPU AI? Or what makes it so hard?
It's like the course designs. It's like I think I mentioned it a couple of months ago, but it's like they put a motherfucking sand trap in the middle of a motherfucking green.
Oh, it's awesome. So good.
It's not awesome. It's terrible course design. It's shit.
In the middle? Like a donut?
In the middle of the fucking green. It's like there is a sand trap.
So what if you're on the other side? Can you bring out your wedge and kick it over?
Well, I mean, it's like if you're trying to aim at the hole, it's like a par three.
Right.
So it's like,
and they put a sound trap. They can at least give you one for that.
I heard the patch changed some things about the course design, but you know,
it's 500 yards.
Yeah,
yeah, 500 yard
part. But it's like an eighth of my memory card, and I don't care to spend that much space on it.
I got that one retail, so I have that on that. You know, that's one of those games where I do like to play it fairly often, but I could just keep the card in there, and I don't have to worry about the space.
What do you got?
Like
the 2 megabyte memory card, Blue?
I got the 8 one.
Gig, right? I was being facetious. Sorry.
Gigabyte. I like to imagine there's some like mad genius golf course designer out there somewhere who's putting sand traps in the middle of greens.
I don't know if you could do that in Sid Meier's Sim Golf, but
that thought warms my heart. Yeah. Anyway, so I have been playing that, but that wasn't one of the things I really want to talk about. But Hot Shots Golf World Invitational, if you haven't played it, find out who your friends are who are playing it. Do some play by mail. It's a lot of fun. You can send little taunts back and forth. And man, I've gotten some real like you know, toilet bowl action going on where the thing I've like hit the putt just so, and it goes around once, around twice, around three times. I'm thinking, oh God, no, and it goes right in. Wow. So good. So good. And you get to share that with somebody who would not have gotten to see it otherwise. So anyway.
You're spamming me over PSN, Jeremy?
Yeah, you know what? I'll take all
15 toilet bowl.
And you can set like all sorts of like, you know, if you want somebody to respond within 48 hours or something. So you got to kind of keep coming back to it. So, you know, stay, you know, be courteous.
Stay current.
Yeah, exactly. But anyway, so what I have been playing and really did want to talk about, a couple of new releases here. First of all, Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate. Yes. And I know there has been no shortage of Monster Hunter talk on this podcast. As I said earlier, our dearly departed Sean Nola Kirkland.
Hashtag RIP Sean.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. Gone to that big monster hunt in the sky. But I am here to carry on the monster hunting legacy. I am sort of a Johnny come lately to Monster Hunter. I've had a copy of Monster Hunter Freedom Unite on my PSP for a couple of years, 3 years. And I kind of would give it some side eye. I kind of look at it like, I don't know if I want to play with that. But just in the last, actually, it started when they announced that the Monster Hunter Tri servers were going to be going down, which is this month. So if you still have Monster Hunter Tri and still want to play it, now is your last chance. So I started kind of dabbling a little bit, and suddenly, I don't know what happened, but I'm not a giant Monster Hunter fan, but I am like hip deep in Monster Hunter now. I started playing Tri. I started playing the PSP version kind of simultaneously off and on. Mm-hmm. I ended up with the, you've probably heard of the My Fair Hunter, Code of Worry, the Monster Hunter Guide that was sort of independently created by Roy Blakely and Sarah O'Donnell? Sarah O'Donnell. And,
any relation to My Fair Lady?
Maybe, possibly. They do a lot of singing. That is a
color me interested
way. That is a great musical, by the way. The song about the rain in Spain, oh, so good.
Higgins, Dr. Higginsworth, yep.
Dr. Henry Higgins. Oh, yes, Henry. Professor Higgins. There's a whole song about Professor Higgins. so I've been playing Monster Hunter, and I don't know. I think I've mentioned the Nintendo group that I go to once a month, and it turns out there are a lot of people who don't know about Monster Hunter, and I found myself, after having just the experience that I just described, I was like the Monster Hunter expert in the room, which is kind of sad. Like, I didn't really know that much about it, hadn't played it that much, but there are a lot of people out there who have not played Monster Hunter, don't know much about it, so I'm going to take just a moment and just really briefly describe Monster Hunter. In Monster Hunter, you basically are clawing your way up from nothing. You start out with, you know, puny weapons, no armor. The general idea is you go out on missions, and in these instances, they're sort of instanced areas where you sort of revisit the same territory over and over again, but from one mission to the next, there may be a different objective. You may be going out to gather resources, so you can pick plants, mine from inside caves, harvests, just all kinds of stuff. Poo and bones, and you know, you can go crawling through stuff if you want to. You could be killing small monsters, killing large monsters, trapping or sedating large monsters and capturing them. And things basically just sort of ramp up as you go. Everything that you do in this game, it becomes a step for you to increase your potency, your endurance, your pleasure, your...
What are we talking about again?
I kind of lost track there for just a minute. But basically, anything that you gather in your inventory can be combined later on, or you can take to a weaponsmith, an armorsmith, and you basically are making yourself into the hunter that you want to be. My Fair Lady is actually based on a Robert Shaw play called Pygmalion, which is based on the Greek myth of the artist who sort of creates this woman, and then, you know, anyway, and she says, now it's time to work on you. Same kind of thing here. It all comes around full circle. So you basically, the stuff that you do in the Monster Hunter world, tracking monsters, learning, they're almost like boss battles every time. And so you have to observe them, attack them, using the weapons that they're weak against, elemental upgrades and things like that. There are different weapons, great swords that take a long time to activate. Combat actually works a lot like Demon Souls or Dark Souls, where basically, once you commit to an attack, you're pretty much stuck in it, and so you better make sure that you're going to hit or get out of the way. There's a lot of rolling out of the way, just like in Demon's Souls, Dark Souls. You can eventually, part of the draw of the Monster Hunter franchise is that you can play co-op. So in Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, if you have the Wii U version, it has native online support. You can just go on play with people. If you have the 3DS version, it only really works online if you have a Wii U adapter piece or something. They did some really weird, they made some weird decisions with this game when it comes to the Wii U version and the 3DS version. Having to have a wireless adapter to play online, external hard drive, you have to get an external hard drive, I think, to install stuff. I don't know. It's weird. It's kind of weird. They have a cross save function where if you have both versions, you can start playing on your portable and then transfer it over to your Wii U if you want to play on your TV and your gamepad. But there was some sort of app that they had to release that didn't come out at launch, and so then they had to release that. It's just kind of weird. There are some weird decisions they've made. Kind of some unfortunate things. Part of the reason I'm describing this,
indeed.
Yeah, it is. Well, and I'm sure there are probably reasons for it, but the part of the reason why I'm describing this in the way that I am is that there are so many people who just don't really know what it is and don't have a lot of interest, and people who do play it, it's kind of an obtuse, sort of an obscure kind of game. Like, you really don't know what are the objectives and what are you doing. There is kind of an element of user unfriendliness to it, and it's kind of unfortunate because it really is a lot of fun, and I found that even though I wasn't, head over heels in love with it to begin with, it's really growing on me, and I'm kind of finding myself like, okay, each mission that you do has a time limit, so you are generally between 30 and, maybe 40 minutes to complete an objective, and you may not take the whole amount of time, but that's sort of the time frame you're looking at for a session, and you can accomplish some pretty decent things when, within that time frame, and then you have something to show for it. You go back to your village or your starting point, and get some of that stuff that you just looted or carved off of that monster, and get a badass new sword with it, or upgrade your armor. All of the armor and everything that you get is fully cosmetic, so it's one of those games where the stuff that you get makes you look awesome and you feel awesome and you're awesome. And it's just very straightforward. I mean, when you get down to it, there are systems in place, just like in Demon's Souls or Dark Souls. There is a rule set or a way that this game is meant to be played. And once you find yourself getting into the rhythm of it, it's really a lot of fun. One thing about Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate that I didn't realize, and maybe this is sort of self-evident after the fact, but it is essentially an updated version of Try on the Wii. So typically with Monster Hunter, I guess they generally release two or three versions of the same game, and just kind of update it each time. And so Try is sort of the probably the final incarnation of this particular Monster Hunter. I think Monster Hunter 4 is on the way. So if you do have this on the Wii, or if you've been thinking about getting it on the Wii, ignore that. Get it on your 3DS or your Wii U. Because it essentially includes all of the content from Try, plus just an insane number of, new content in terms of different kinds of monsters and armor pieces and things like that. The thing is, it's the kind of stuff that you probably really only get to the more time you put into it. And I almost wonder, I sometimes think about Monster Hunter versus, Dark Souls, for example. Dark Souls got a lot of attention and a lot of popularity. Eventually released on PC, crossed some crazy borders there. And it just, I would say that it has become more or less popular. I don't know if that's fair to say, Dark Souls popular. And you got to wonder if the people at Capcom look at that. Because in so many ways, this is the same kind of game. And you got to wonder if they're, clawing at their eyes, going, why did this not
I think that's a good analogy for me because the combat is very punch out ish because one of the things you have to do is study tells for each of the monsters. Like you just can't go in and hack away. Instead, you really have to study the mechanics and they give off little movements that will say, hey, I'm going to swipe my tail or I'm going to do a stomp. And you have to know exactly when to strike. And because your strikes take time, there's that element.
Yeah, that's true, and you have to sort of be thinking a couple of steps.
Yeah,
And then the management of your inventory, like if you're going to be attacking a monster, but I want to get a little tracking pellet to throw at him and splash on him, so that if he escapes, I can follow him. You have to kind of plan ahead for that because it takes time to put your weapon away and go into your pouch, get out this thing, and then the controls are a little bit janky. The thing about this was people always talked about the PSP claw, and what that was is the camera control was mapped to the D-pad, where everything your movement was mapped to the circle pad or the what do they call it at the time, the nub, and so you ended up doing like this weird thumb forefinger claw thing. And the same thing is true on the 3DS. They do have the Circle Pad Pro attachment that you can get so that you can do a dual stick camera control and movement control. I don't have that, and at high level play I could see that really being a problem, but if you have your options doing 3DS or Wii U, I would say start out with the Wii U version. And if you really want to take it on the go somewhere, maybe get the 3DS version as a kind of backup.
Have they released a Circle Pad Pro for the XL?
I don't think so. And I don't know if they will. And it's kind of weird. I was talking with, Brad Galloway over Game Critics, and he was saying, why didn't they release that as a pack-in with this thing? No. And because it supports it, and it's one of the first things, it lets you set whether or not you're using the Circle Pad Pro. And I'm not even sure, does that thing even circulate in the United States? Can you even get a Circle Pad Pro?
I don't think I've seen one out in the wild. GameStop and maybe direct from either Nintendo or was it Amazon? I think there's only two places, and they're not at GameStop. They're not on the shelves. I have not seen one in the wild.
I mean, I'm sure it can be had, but it's just not easy. Like the game itself, it is not easy. It is for the people who are truly dedicated to having the experience, Circle Pad Pro. There's a demo. One of the neat things about the advent of the 3DS and now the Wii U is that they've started to do demos, and there is a demo for Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, and it is not what I would call the best demo. That's one of the difficult things about this, and I will say that the opening few missions of Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, is there a shortcut for this? There's got to be an easier way to say that. MH3U is that getting your sort of opening game, it's a little bit like the missions sort of alternate between really tedious, like go gather mushrooms, we're going to really teach you the basics, which I don't know, in any other circumstance might be welcome, but in this it's kind of like, all right, I'm running around gathering mushrooms. One thing I didn't mention, which also kind of parallels the Souls games, is that you have this stamina bar as well. So, where you might want to rush through something like that, you can only hold down your sprint for so long before you start to stumble around and catch your breath. And so you do have to manage that, which, becomes kind of a tactical element in the monster fights themselves. You can cook meat and eat rations and things like that so that you can restore your stamina. But there really is, once you get into it and kind of understand what the game is about, there really is a lot there to like. And obviously, I think everybody has heard that this game is insanely popular in Japan. I think it's gathered some steam here. I mean, especially for the Wii U, where there aren't that many games to choose from at the moment to begin with. I think it's getting a little bit more exposure, but I think it still kind of has the problem if you don't really know what you're getting into. I mean, I could see somebody who buys Monster Hunter sight unseen and just is like, what is this?
Right. How does it perform on the two different platforms?
It looks on the Wii U version. To be honest with you, it is essentially an up-resed version of Monster Hunter Tri. So it definitely looks nice. It's nice high res textures. I couldn't stop myself. It just came out of my mouth. High res textures. It does look high res, higher definition, of course, than the Wii version. But I kind of get the feeling like it could do better. One of the neat things though about Monster Hunter is the art, like the way the monsters look, the way your armor and equipment looks. Is really kind of neat, and it's fun to look at and fun to watch, and they come up with interesting, graphical and visual elements. So it is kind of fun, and it definitely looks better on the Wii U. 3DS version, I'd say, is not bad. I would say it probably looks comparable to something that you might find on the Wii, which, you know, it's not bad for a little handheld
device. And the load times between sections?
It still does that little loading thing where the word loading kind of jiggles on those blocks, but right. I almost wonder, like, I was thinking about this, because I bet the Wii U version probably doesn't need to do
it
that.
It could stream.
I almost wonder, with
a landscape that could, you know, stream that.
Yeah, I almost wonder, though, if they don't put that in artificially or do it on purpose, because that's kind of how the game has always been.
Yeah, I kind of think they do. I thought about that one time, and for some reason, it popped in my head that there was a reason for that.
Yeah, I bet there's not a strict technical reason, other than maybe, I mean, if there is, it's probably that they had to, if they were developing it for the 3DS and the Wii U, they probably had to, you know, develop for the lesser powered platform. But I could see, and it'll be interesting to see if in Monster Hunter 4, because there is kind of a room-by-room element of the different territories. Yeah. The maps that you play in Monster Hunter, they are divided into little numbered areas. And area number one looks like this, and it has a funny shape, and it connects to area two that has water in it, and that connects to area three that has a cave. And so there is sort of a you know, move from one room to the other. And if you're fighting a monster and it stumbles off and flees, you know, you kind of have to track it from one area to the next. And I could see that sort of, like I said, just because that's the way the formula works, they might want to preserve the fact that, okay, you're going from one area to another. You know, we're going to put this loading screen in if only to, you know, it's a time lapse as you wander up the mountain or something like that. But but it still does have those. I wouldn't say that the load was ever really offensive in any way, but it is definitely still there. You know, Robert mentioned, you know, the game kind of feels a little bit like Punch-Out. I could say, yeah, I can see that, but, you know, on the other hand, maybe it's also a little bit of Shadow of the Colossus, too. So, you know, these great noble creatures, and you're killing them for their, you know, gizzards and things.
Eliza, where the devil are my dragon slippers.
Yeah, yeah. So, anyhow, but...
Jeremy, now I got to ask you. After playing Monster Hunter, are you checking out other games in the genre? Or are you looking forward to maybe Soul Sacrifice for the Vita later this month?
Yeah, Soul Sacrifice, I am not sure what to think about Soul Sacrifice. It's apparently been selling really well, and the Vita got a great little sales bump in Japan that lasted a week or two, but I'm not extremely excited about it. I'm certainly willing to, I'm open to that possibility. It's kind of funny, though, I actually was talking to Sean, well, from beyond the grave.
Ouija board?
Yes.
Rise from your grave.
Rise from your grave, Dr. Waiwi. the thing we were talking about was that maybe 5 or 6 years ago, all of the games wanted to be Monster Hunter. And he said, well, what are you talking about? And I don't know if you guys remember, but, you know, Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker had kind of a collecting element to it.
Sure.
Valkyria Chronicles 2 had kind of a collecting element to it as you go to the different battles and kill guys, and they would have certain things they would drop, and you could make things with it. People really want to tap into this Monster Hunter thing, and I'm not sure, it's not really clear to me that that's something that people really want to play here, or that's really going to do well. But like I said, at least in Japan, Soul Sacrifice had that, you know, apparently it had what some people wanted. But I think the other thing about Soul Sacrifice is that it's got a, from what I understand, it's a little bit more immediate in the way that the components that you get from others are going to affect you. I mean, it's more of an action game rather than, I mean, Monster Hunter is just very methodical. That's one thing about it. If you get into really high level play in Monster Hunter, you're really thinking about everything, and there's a certain right way to do stuff. And I get the feeling like Soul Sacrifice is a little bit more of a fun action game that kind of has collect-y elements to it. But yeah, I mean, I'm totally open to the idea of, you know, some games are fun to grind, and some games are not. And, you know, some people are okay with grinding and some people aren't. And I think that's kind of what this boils down to. But in terms of the execution of the game, I'd say it works really well. And it's just kind of a question of whether that sort of thing appeals to you. So try out the demo for Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate on the 3DS. And, you know, like I said, it may not be the best demo, but it might give you an idea of somewhat, at least, of what the game is about and what it's trying to do. So. Okay, so other than that, the other thing that I have spent a little bit of time with is the console version of Terraria. I know that we've talked a little bit about Terraria in the past, and so I don't know that there's a lot to talk about here, but the thing about Terraria, again, is that kind of like Monster Hunter, there is a very deep game here, and there's kind of a question of whether you have the patience for it. I think most people recognize the name Terraria and immediately think of Minecraft. And I usually, in these conversations, try not to draw direct comparisons between the two. But in this case, I want to bring it up because the difference to me between something like Terraria and something like Minecraft. So I guess before I get into that, Terraria is a sort of 2D open world sandbox kind of game based on ecological systems. You know, you have your trees and your dirt and your rocks, and you go mining for things, cutting things down. Again, a lot like Monster Hunter, gathering resources, building your own stuff. I didn't even realize I was going to have this theme this week, but apparently those are the kinds of games that I've been playing. And you basically build up your little empire from the dirt, and you make yourself some awesome equipment out of some ore that you mined and smelted, and you know, some awesome monster part that you got the tail of some floating eyeball that has a hook on it, and you can use that to make some crazy weapon. Minecraft, of course, is more of a cubist 3D kind of game. Same, similar idea. You know, you have different elements, different resources that you find out in the wild as you explore, and you can, you know, build a little homestead for yourself, fight a few monsters if you want to, that sort of thing. And both of these games have been recipients of several updates, I think, to give them a little less of a, you know, overwhelming open world kind of feel and a little bit more of a focused, directed experience. But I want to ask you guys a question. So this is the Terraria Minecraft personality test. Do you guys prefer building levels in Little Big Planet, or do you prefer playing levels in Little Big Planet?
Building.
I kind of prefer playing, but I'm not uber crazy about Little Big Planet to begin with.
Okay, well, that's not part of the question. But so we have one of each. So the reason the controls are too floaty.
Blue was an outlier. Anyway. Yeah. I don't like Sackboy.
So here's my analogy for this. You know, the Minecraft, because Minecraft is available on Xbox 360 as well as PC, of course. Terraria is available on PC, but it was recently released on PSN and Xbox Live Arcade. So you have to make it. You can't like both, right? That's the rule. You have to choose one or the other. No, that's not true. You can like them both. But if you're not sure, the reason I ask about Little Big Planet is because, to me, having played Minecraft, the draw of Minecraft, and if you've ever seen the videos or if you've ever gone onto a friend's Minecraft server, there is definitely a huge focus on the building of stuff. They have systems in Minecraft for levers and, you know, clear blocks and neat little ways that you can build something that does kind of a certain thing. And that's kind of it. I mean, in Minecraft, there are monsters and there are areas to explore and predefined little areas to some extent, but for the most part, and I should disclose here, I have not played the adventure update to Minecraft. I think they sort of recognized that there needed to be something a little bit more focused in that game, so there are adventure updates available for it. But Terraria, on the other hand, there is some building. I mean, you can build yourself a little 2D house with 2D rooms, but for the most part, most of the stuff that you do in that is it contributes or it builds into your equipment. You know, it's more about I'm going to get some great armor, or I'm going to get a great new weapon and it's more powerful, or they have a lot of different kinds of weapons. Terraria to me reminds me a little bit of a cross between like Zelda 2 and say Ghosts and Goblins. I think it's probably kind of the aesthetic slash feel that you kind of get from Terraria. And they also have added NPCs, and you can get them to do little crafting things for you, or, you know, you can talk to them. But most of it is about, you know, the adventure, or, you know, there are a lot more areas in there. There's sort of preset little areas. You might come across a little zombie coven or some little hole where skeletons are hanging out, and you might have some chests in there. And there's just not a lot of that in Minecraft. I mean, there is some that you might find something, hey, this is kind of an interesting area, but Terraria, I think, is a lot more about like the fighting and the adventuring, and both games have an exploratory element to them, but I feel like Minecraft is a little bit more open-ended and lends itself a little bit more to the building of things.
I'll buy that comparison.
Yeah. So lots of weapons, fewer gadgets, build a house, and that's about it. and I gotta say, I realized this just recently, but the music to Terraria, you can play the music to Terraria underneath anything, and it'll sound like it fits right in. In fact, I may hear. What is that right now? It sounds like the music to Terraria. I think Robert must have gone in and added that in because I spontaneously just... Oh, isn't that beautiful?
That's Guile's theme.
Oh, it is Guile's theme. That's right. Actually, you can get Guile hair in Terraria. When you customize your little dude, you can give him a little Guile hair. The one thing that is different about Terraria on the consoles versus the PC, of course, the PC is mouse-driven, so when you can move your mouse cursor to something that is in your character's vicinity and swing a pickaxe, and it'll start to chip away at the earth or at the rock or the ore that you're chipping away at. In the PS3 version, which is the version that I've been playing, the thumbsticks, it sort of becomes sort of twin-sticky, kind of. Mm-hmm. One stick controls your movement, the other stick controls a reticle that kind of orbits around you, or you know, it can go in a circular fashion around you. So you can sort of aim the thing in the general direction, and it'll lock on to little elements. Like if you go to cut a tree, the reticle will automatically lock on to the base of the tree so that you start chopping the tree and the wood comes falling down. It does take a little bit of getting used to. Honestly, I think it does lend itself a little more toward a PC kind of interface, but... I could see myself getting used to this. When I played Torchlight, for example, Torchlight the first, mm-hmm. I played it a little bit on PC, but I found that I really preferred it with an Xbox controller. Yeah. I played it a lot more on Xbox, and I feel like it kind of does the same thing with Terraria in that respect. So, other than that, it's basically the same game. You can play co-op. You can set, PvP or friendly mode. You can set difficulty levels, and it's entirely procedurally generated. Lots of different areas you can go into: desert areas, water areas, spooky ghost areas. There are, like I said, dungeons that you can go into. So it's just like I said, for people who are more into that and maybe who don't really get the homesteading nesting concept of Minecraft as much, Terraria might be something for you to look into. There is a demo I noticed, so you may want to try that out. I think probably a Terraria demo will probably make a little bit more sense to you than maybe mm-hmm. the Monster Hunt demo even did. So,
and coming to the Vita.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that. Actually, this is going to be really devastating for me, because when I first played Terraria on the PC, I don't know if I've told this story here, but my first time playing Terraria, I sat down, started playing it, looked up, and it was like 10 hours later, and that was the first time I ever played it, and it spooked the hell out of me. I was like, I can't do this. And I shut it down and didn't play it again for months. I did have a couple of friends who kind of got me back into it a little bit, but it is one of those kinds of games. Like you need to specifically like set an alarm to remind yourself to come up for air. And the Vita version, this is one of those things where I was like, half of me was saying, yes, yes, please, Vita version, Vita version, Vita, Vita, Vita. The other half was like, oh God, no, no, no Vita version, no, oh no. And the footprint, actually the neat thing about this will be so perfect for the Vita, because potentially they could use touch screens to simulate the mouse interface. You could still use the thumbsticks mm-hmm. if you want to. But the footprint is tiny. This entire game is less than 50 megabytes. It's like 45 megabytes for the whole game. No. I don't know how big the save files are. I'd be curious to see if the save files aren't bigger somehow, because, you know, they have to keep track of all the little blocks and pixels and things. But, It on the Vita, it would be a perfect game to just like load up and putz around for a few minutes, and it's going to be terrible. Another game I just want to say, please don't bring it to the Vita, but please do bring it to the Vita. FTL, Faster Than Light, if that game comes to the Vita, my life might be over.
Vita's so. Becoming a indie king.
Yeah, they are definitely, I think it's kind of no secret that Sony is really courting the independent developers at this point, and I think that's a smart thing for them to be doing. Indies are low cost to obtain, to bring to your platform. They are definitely reaching out, which I think is more than, I mean, Nintendo might be doing a little bit of it, but I don't know if Microsoft is planning. I mean, if they're going to get started, they'd probably better start doing it now. Another story came out just recently. What's his name? Who did Retro City Rampage? What is
Ryan?
His name?
Starts with a P. Yeah, Brian
Pulitz. What is that dude's name? And yeah, he. yeah, that is right. Palmasano. I don't know what it is. Anyway, he did a thing where he broke down the sales of his game, and the Xbox 360 actually didn't do too bad, but he said that if he had known what he knew now about the costs and just the politics of getting involved with Microsoft in that respect, he said he probably wouldn't have done it. And
Provinciano.
Provinciano, that's right. That's exactly right, Brian Provinciano. And I thought it was interesting that he was, you know, so forthcoming about that. And he's not the first one to say things like that either.
I heard initially someone reported that, and he said the sales figures were a little bit off. He said 100,000 altogether.
Yeah, he did. And he revised those. I can't remember what he said about it, but basically he had said that
the WiiWare version was charity.
Yeah, he basically said it was like a $20,000 gift to his fans or something.
I think less than 5,000 copies sold, which considering, you know, the number of people that still have a Wii hooked up to their.
But he, when I would sort of casually inquire with him, he said that his favorite version to develop for was actually the Vita version. And I think that he said it was a snap, basically, I think were his words. And and I believe that that's probably been a goal of Sony for the PlayStation 4 as well. And they are actively going out and courting these people who get a lot of cachet, a lot of word of mouth, a lot of buzz, and bringing them to their platforms and trying to, you know, make that the new little haven for those sorts of games. And it's smart. I guess we'll, you know, kind of have to see if it pans out. Because, you know, one thing that somebody pointed out to me was when they mentioned that Spelunky was coming to the Vita and what's the black and white one with the little boy who gets killed, touches
Limbo?
Anything. Limbo, yeah. If the kid skins his knee, he falls over dead. You know, and somebody had mentioned, they're like, you know, it's good, but gosh, I kind of don't want to be playing all these old games. I thought, you know, that's a good point. But on the flip side,
worked out well for the Wii U.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I guess Batman, the Armored Edition, you know, maybe most people have played it. But I think there are a lot of people out there who still haven't played, you know, some of these little games. But it's a good point. I mean, that's something they'll have to figure out is, you know, is it really exciting that, you know, Spelunky and Limbo that came out a year ago and 2 years ago, is it really worth?
I guess it, at least the Vita, you can take it on the go.
Yeah,
you know, the problem with the Wii U with Tekken and some of the other Batman and some of the other games is that, you know, people more than likely already have a console and it's selling for $50 or $60 compared
to and these games are low budget generally anyway. Yeah. And you know, a lot of them, I mean, Machinarium came out on the Vita and it's a great little port of that too. And I mean, if the platform is right, I mean, these indie developers, they've got nothing to lose. I mean, it's more exposure for them to put them on these newer platforms. And for Sony, I doubt they're taking any big risks, you know, getting the games ported over. And like I said, those, you know, right now, everybody is all about indie, you know. You've got the indie hipsters out there preaching the word. So that was for Sony. I just wanted her to hear that. So.
Yes. And Indie Outlook coming up right after Blue.
Yeah, here. Absolutely.
Hey, that's me. Oh, crap, I did it again. I feel like Sideshow Bob with those rakes.
Blue, you realized you could be replaced by a soundboard.
Oh, speaking of soundboards, I have been playing with the Botchamania soundboard for Android.
Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of fun. That is a lot of fun. If you
Thank you
are
for not bringing it to the show.
Oh, you don't know how close I was. If I had a technical way of doing it, you would probably have the Iron Sheik shouting, "Fucking bullshit!" throughout the entire show.
Just during Jeremy's talk.
Well, it has been a while since I've been on the show, but I have been quite busy. I'll get the smaller things I've already talked about a billion times or things I haven't played a ton of, so I really don't have much business talking about too long. Games out of the way first. First of all, I went on another Fire Pro Wrestling kick, and I finally finished the Victory Road for Fire Pro D, mm-hmm. which means you have to face every single wrestler on the roster. And I think the total number ended up being like 177 wrestlers or 178. And I've been chipping away at it for, I think I've had the game for well over a year. So whenever I got it, I started chipping away at it.
Which version is this?
Fire Pro D is on the Sega Dreamcast.
Yeah, Dreamcast, okay.
And, you know, I gotta say, I think I finally figured out why I like the, by most standards, obsolete version, that being D, as opposed to Fire Pro Returns on the PlayStation 2, which did get a local release, and you can probably get it for about $5 now. With FirePro D, it's like you had the entire American rosters made from the get-go. You don't have to go into the Creator Wrestler and change a damn thing if you don't want to. You know, you had the Stone Cold, you had the Rock, Undertaker, all these guys. Mm-hmm. But with FirePro...
Goldust?
No Goldust, actually. I think he was in... I know he was in G on the PlayStation 1, and I think he was also in FirePro 2 for the Game Boy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, with FirePro Returns, it's like they had some of the American guys, but if you wanted to get, like, the A-list guys, you know, the Undertaker, you know, the ones I mentioned before, you had to go in and create them from scratch. And if you are kind of like a perfectionist like me, you want to have everything as official as possible, that takes a lot of work. You have to use, like, the color data from FirePro D, and you have to use the same AI settings, because FirePro has the best AI ever in a wrestling game. You can customize it just about any way you can possibly think of. And on top of that, you have to dig around, you know, on the internet, on message boards, trying to find the official stats from the game, and you have to transfer those, you know, into the new one. And this is a lengthy ass process. I mean, one wrestler can take several hours to make if you're having to go back and forth and doing this and doing that. And, you know, with D, it's like you can just jump in and have fun with it. And the biggest appeal of the FirePro series, you know, to somebody who grew up in the Attitude Era, you know, Monday Night Wars, Nitro, Raw, et cetera, was that you could have this one game where the WCW guys could fight the WWF guys, who could also fight the guys in New Japan and All Japan and so on and so forth. And you can just pick up D and play it. You can play it with a game, or you can play it like a game. With Returns, it's more of like the create your own universe type of thing. It's like most of the fun in FirePro Returns comes from creating your own content, creating lifelike wrestlers as you know, as close as possible. And
Jeremy, I think you should ask the question: do you like wrestling more or creating wrestlers for Blue?
You know, I...
you blew it. You totally blew it. Sort of,
well, the thing is, I can see where Blue is coming from, though, because I think my late... I don't know if we've talked about it on the show, but I know Blue is into this as well, but Video Game Championship Wrestling, I'm thinking of that right at this moment. I'm wondering if you can do Video Game Championship Wrestling with FirePro Wrestling. Is that possible?
I have seen, you know, PAX online on YouTube and stuff like that, where people have created, like, Spider-Man and the Mario Brothers and, I think, like, Wolverine. And, I mean, the FirePro Creator Wrestlers is very, very detailed for how, considering it's, like, 2D sprites. You can, you know, customize the colors. You can have, like, with Returns, you could have, like, different layers of clothing, like, like, if you wanted to customize the tights in just the right way, you could put, like, one layer that's, like, stripes and, like, another layer that's, like, camo, and then you can change one color on the camo, and then change another layer on the stripes. And, I mean, there's just, like, all sorts of different ways you can, like, fool your eyes into thinking, oh, hey, that's Super Mario. Mm-hmm.
And it's too bad you can't set, like, AI versus AI in this, though, huh?
Yeah. AI versus AI is actually, like, one of the big draws of the FirePro series. Is like, there
can you so you can literally make Video Game Championship Wrestling with the sprites that you.
Yeah,
that's it.
It's. I mean, you could. I mean, I'm not sure how out there you can get, because I know I've seen some of those Video Game Championship Wrestling stuff. They are.
They're awesome.
Bowser one in particular is like, how the fuck did they do that?
They have some the Bowser versus Ganon, like, grudge matches in the fire ring. Awesome.
Yes.
Deagle, you know what we're talking about, right?
Oh, yeah.
Video Game Championship Wrestling? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I
so
mean...
They make the characters using Character Creator. So, if listeners, if you have not heard of Video Game Championship Wrestling, Google it, Bing it, whatever you gotta do. It's on Twitch. They have a regular schedule, I think. And not to derail or anything, Blue, I'm sorry, but to me, the most fun thing about it, because I'm not into wrestling at all, I'm not into wrestling culture, I don't know anything about Raw or War or Nitro or any of that stuff. But
Give me an afternoon, I'll learn to you.
I love watching the comments, though, just like scrolling by, because everybody gets so hyped about it. And there's this language that, that people have who are into wrestling, and they talk about like table san and stuff. Like, I don't even know what that shit means. But it is just fun to watch people get into it. And they're like, oh my God, 1,000 years of Bowser Forever and stuff like that. Like, they just get into it, and it's just way fun to watch. And I think, I don't know if on the Video Game Championship, does he set it to like the lowest possible setting? Because those guys are pretty dumb. Do we know anything about that? Is that the setting?
Probably does. I mean, I know, I think we all saw that this one championship match, you know, with Bowser and Ganon in the Inferno Ring.
Yeah.
And I think at one point, I want to say it was Bowser was up by like 20 different pins at one point.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like definitely not the sharpest knife in the drawer.
But I mean, that's what makes it good too. It's just like, cause the stupidest stuff happens, and it's just a blast. If you're on Twitter, they announce it when it happens. They stream it live, and it's way more fun live, because I just get a kick just watching the comments scroll by. And sometimes I'll just be like, oh yeah, no, I'll be like, you know, WTF, like Bowser Forever, whatever. And it's just like, everybody's just like, trolling each other. It's just great fun. So Blue, if you can set something like that up for Fire Pro, man, I'm there.
I gotta tell you, I've been really fiddling around with video content, and I've been wanting to do more video content. And I mean, that is not a not something out of the question.
That's where you can start. There you go.
Video Game Wrestling Federation. Oh man, I said it on a podcast, now somebody's gonna make it. Oh crap.
Already reserved the domain. It's mine.
Lastly, and this is the main event, I kind of saved the best for last because I figured we'd have a lot of fun with
it. Did I miss the scorecard girl? Where'd she go?
Well, one thing's for sure, I don't think you could have missed her if we did have one, because I would have had her breast settings to OMG. We are going to talk about Dead or Alive 5 Plus for the PlayStation Vita. Basically, you know, Tecmo, Team Ninja, whatever, announced several months ago that they were porting Dead or Alive 5 over to the PS Vita, and it was going to have crossplay, which it does. It was going to have cross goods for DLC purchases, which it does, as well as cross save. And, it has that too.
Right.
And you know, I gotta say, I just put the finishing touches on my review right before we recorded, actually. I have to say, Team Ninja did a very, very good job with this one. I will say it's not 100% console perfect as far as the features go, but the gameplay is. It's a very fast, fluid, and even in spite of the fact that, you know, some of the graphics got scaled down a bit, it's still a very pretty game.
Talk to me about scaled down.
Well, basically, you know, the character models don't look quite as impressive as they do on the home console, which, I mean, it's the Vita,
right,
you know.
Lower poly count. Okay, I can deal with that.
I think some of the stage effects have also gotten toned down a bit.
Like the ones with the missiles? the tanks.
Well, actually, you know, I mean, I gotta give DOA 5 Plus credit. Right. I mean, you know, with some of the other fighters like Street Fighter Cross Tekken and Ultimate Marvel versus Capcom, you know, on the Vita, it's like they've had to scale down the backgrounds quite a bit to get the gameplay running at a solid 60 frames per second.
Right.
But with Dead or Alive 5 Plus, it runs at 60 frames per second. Some of the background elements do run at, like, I want to say it's thirty frames per second. I'm eyeballing it. So you know.
So well, character 60, background 30.
Yeah, that seems to be what I can tell it runs at. Mm. But they didn't really scale down the amount of things going on, as far as I can tell. It's you know, you got people in the crowd and they're jumping around, and you know, laser lights going off, and like a jumbo screen is replaying what the screen itself is showing, and stuff like that. I mean, as far as the environments go, it's the best they've looked on the Vita.
Wow. Now, I noticed on, I played it on PS3. And every once in a while, it would give me kind of a frame rate hitch or hiccup. And for fighters, to me, that's pretty, you know, that's a pretty big deal.
Well, you know, I mean, there is like a hitch at like at the very beginning of the fight sometimes. I think it's like an arcade mode.
Okay.
It's like, you know, get ready, fight. And there's like a brief. Yeah, just
like don't fight yet. Okay, now.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like split second, you know, just. Right. You know, just a split second hitch. And then as far as I can tell, I mean, I did not notice any sort of dips.
Okay, cool.
I mean, and, you know, that's, I mean, you know, considering how much stuff is going on, you know, on the screen, and that's pretty damned impressive.
Yeah, that's good.
And there is one questionable thing about it is, okay, tag team mode has been taken outside of the story mode. I don't know why, because when I played it in the story mode, everything seemed to run very well.
What? That's craziness.
It is.
Unless they're going to charge for it.
I don't know. I'm kind of wondering if maybe they couldn't get the online working, so they just cut the mode out in general.
Well, yeah, but what about, you know, not local, but what about against the CPU?
Yeah,
non-story.
I mean, it's I just don't know what the logic behind it really was, because I mean, it seemed to run just fine when I played it in story mode, because there are several, you know, tag matches and like one or two handicap matches, you know, two-on-ones.
Sure.
And I mean, unless there was like some performance drops that they deemed unacceptable in there somewhere, I mean, it's kind of a head scratcher.
Okay.
But
how many tag matches did you play in the campaign?
I want to say it was around a half a dozen.
Okay.
You know, I mean, and you know, I mean, as far as the single player content goes, you know, it's got the entire story mode, as far as I can tell. All of the characters are unlocked from the get go. You don't have to re-unlock them. If you have the PS3 version, thanks to cross save, you can transfer over titles and unlocked costumes as well as any DLC you've bought. It also has, you know, the arcade mode, time attack mode, survival, as well as the just like the jump in the, I think it's just called fight or whatever.
The original solo name.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, those, you know, I mean, they keep me occupied. I mean, I think that's the way they set it up with DOA 5 Plus is a lot better than with Dead or Alive Dimensions, where you had like, you know, you had the difficulties, but they were the same. I believe they were like the same characters you every single time, as opposed to being randomized. Right. Like if you played on True Legend or whatever, you know, you'd face, you know, this guy and that guy and this guy and that guy, and there was just no reason to play it over again once you finished it.
Right.
But with this one, you know, the you know, you have this score, you're chasing your high score or whatever. But the characters are, and as far I think the stages are the same, but the characters are different. You know, the characters are randomized and whatnot. And so, you know, there's more to do if you're just playing solo or just, you know, I mean, it's a portable game. Odds are you're not always going to be playing multiplayer, which could possibly be a pretty good thing. Because, you know, the online is rather hit or miss. You know, I've had, you know, some matches that are, you know, really good, you know, playable. I mean, you know, there's going to be a little bit of latency here and there.
Sure.
But sometimes with, you know, with some of the matches, it's like I'd hit the button and, you know, I want to say like a full second later, the action would show up on screen. The input delay was... it was to me unacceptable because the window, the countering window, is so strict. excuse me, in Dead or Alive 5 Plus, that you know you have to plan a second ahead, just when to time it. You really can't do that, and it takes forever to get into matches. You know, I'm trying to play ranked matches, and you know, and I have the settings set at you know, you can play as or you have, I have the settings for set for cross-play, you know, PS3 and Vita. And, you know, it's like, I'm just sitting there and sitting there. And, you know, I mean, there have been times where it would take me 10 minutes to get into a match. It's like I'd finally get matched up with people, and for some unknown reason, they'd cancel the fight. I don't know. I wasn't sure if it was just like some sort of like a server glitch or something like that. But it's like it would just take me forever to get into matches because the opponents kept on canceling on me. But I mean,
maybe it was a matchmaking issue where they already canceled out because they didn't want to wait.
It could be, you know. Also, there's an issue with canceling. It's like if you hit the cancel button, it's like it would still search and search and search and search, and it's you'd hit the circle button to cancel multiple times, and it would not back out. Hmm. You know, I mean, I'm still playing the online portion because, you know, if you play enough ranked matches, you unlock the legendary swimsuits that are a royal pain in the ass to get any other way. But
it's good to have a goal, though.
Yeah. And but I mean, overall, I mean, DOA 5 Plus is a very, very good game, and I'm very pleased with it. You know, I ended up getting it early because I don't know whether it was just GameStop. I think it might have been just GameStop lifted the street date on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up getting it, I want to say it was like 3 or 4 days before the official launch.
Yep. So you're
for the game. Yeah. And I mean, I just finished up the review, and I'll go ahead and say the score here. I gave it an A-.
Wow.
Because I think that, you know, online woes aside, it's a very, very good port. It looks great. It is, I think it's the best 3D fighter on the system. I think BlazBlue takes the crown as far as overall faithfulness to the home console version, because aside from like some cloud shading issues or whatever, it's Continuum Shift Extend is like perfect with the console version.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think top to bottom, Dead or Alive 5 Plus is the best like 3D fighter on the Vita.
Well, let's break street date right now and deliver this episode's edition of Indie Outlook. Welcome back to Indie Outlook. Robert here, along with Indie Guru, Sai. And today we have a couple of titles I'm really excited to discuss. How about you, Sai?
Yeah, of course.
Of course. Of course not. Well, the funny thing was, is that the other day, we couldn't quite narrow down to two games, and here we are with two titles today that we're going to talk about that share a lot of similarities. So, Sai, I want you to take lead and tell us about Maldita Castilla.
Well, yes. Today we've got a lot of ghosts and goblins nostalgia. First of all, we're going to start talking about Maldita Castilla, which is an amazing 2D arcade game that got released last December. It's basically a tribute to the game itself, you know, to ghosts and goblins. Mm-hmm. One of the most difficult games ever made.
Yes.
Oh my God.
I lost hours. I lost hours in the original.
I've got nightmares with that game still.
You know that goddamn magician that would turn you into like a duck, or what else would he turn you into?
Fuck if I know. I don't know. My mind still tries to work it out. He turned me into different things,
and I'd want, well, on the Genesis version, I'd want the cape where you could shoot the lightning in three different directions. That was my goal. All right. Anyway, I'm sidetracking. Tell me about the, more about the game.
Okay, well, the game is pretty fascinating as it is, because the more you actually get to know about the game itself, and, you know, just Loco Malito, which is the developer, is the more that, you know, I look forward to everything he does. So a little bit about the game itself. It's the story happens about 1081, when the Asian demon finds out about this broken-hearted Mora mourning the loss of her love. Then this demon seduces her in order to make all her tears into some sort of a magic key that will unleash hell into the Castile Kingdom.
Wow.
Do you even know
heavy
what a
stuff.
Do you even know what a Mora is?
No. You know, she's a character in the game. She's a character in the game.
Right? I actually had to Google that crap because I had no idea. But it's what?
A Mora is love.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Never mind.
Mora. No. Mora is supposed to be part of the Galician mythology. It's supposedly a young witch.
Oh, stay away from them.
Anyways, you're distracting. So as I was saying, the game starts with the King Alfonso giving orders to four of his most loyal knights, Don Diego, Mendoza, Quesada, and of course, Ramiro, the one that you're playing.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually pretty fascinating because, you know, the game's got six levels. They're all divided in chapters, you know, about a total, I think, 14 bosses, right, if I remember correctly. Every single level is divided as a chapter. In the level, you have got a mini boss, and at the end, of course, a big annoying fucking boss. I remember chapter one and two were fantastic. We're really, you know, oh, this is fun. This is great. It's fantastic. But then chapter three, you know, things got a little bit too serious. And then in chapter four was a whole level of fuck you game. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. It's so fucking complicated. Anyways, there's four different endings based on merits and secrets, of course. Mm. I got to play it all, and I only got two.
Wow, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. The good endings, the bad endings?
Yes. I'm kind of philosophical as it is anyways, but of course the endings have got to do with time and the achievements that you do along the games, and of course collecting the tiers and all that.
Did you ever finish Ghosts and Goblins, the original?
Yes.
Where, well, I didn't actually finish it, but they told me I forgot like a bracelet and I had to go back to the start, and then things got harder. Oh, that was such
a... I don't even remember a bracelet.
It was something, I think that was the whole purpose of your quest, and then you forgot a bracelet, and then you had to start the game over. And I said, screw it, I barely made it. anyway, the one thing I wanted to talk about, Maldita Castilla, was the one thing I really loved was the music. It perfectly captured that melodic, that charmingly, it kind of sounds metallic sound of Capcom's, their old arcade boards. I think it was the CP System 1. And there's just something about the sound that makes me remember and pushes me back, you know, to that kind of coin-op era. The other thing was the art. When the main character gets dropped off at the very beginning, you have those twisted trees that kind of rise up, and you have these puffs of green greenery. You get those looming clouds.
Wait, who gets dropped?
The main character. What's his name? Sir Arthur. Or no, what's his name in this one?
What? Ramiro.
Him too. And Quesadilla. Quesadilla the dog. Anyway, I'm talking about the art.
Remember, he doesn't get dropped. He jumps off the thing.
I heard somebody whisper, get off here. I'm kidding. Anyway, 3D games just don't have that thing for me, that pixel art. Something about pixel art, it's like looking at a painting and I can enjoy it and I embrace it. So that's my love for it.
Yeah, no. This game is absolutely awesome. It seriously sends you back to that good feeling of, you know, all our games.
And it's a two-man team that developed that?
It was one person alone, but he worked with someone else for the music.
Wow, that's amazing. So this week I was going to talk about a game called Vulgar, and that's V-O-L-G-A-R-R, not the, you know, surely pronounced like the word that is synonymous
vulgar?
With, yeah, offensiveness, vulgar. So Vulgar the Viking. I'm going to get vulgar here. So it's got both alliteration and a reference to crudeness, so that right there makes it one of my favorite monikers of the year. But anyway, getting past the clever name. Sai, I know sometimes you accuse me of not liking the indies, which this whole segment disproves that. But the one thing I truly love to
say... I have never, ever said anything like that. How dare you say that?
Okay. Maybe it's all my imagination.
You're full of crap.
That may be. anyway, the one thing I love to see is when small independent teams, they reinvigorate old genres that maybe are perhaps, you know, overlooked by the industry at large. And by that... you know, you have your love for the clickies, and by that, you know, you taught me it's slang for point-and-click adventures that were made by Sierra, and now, rest in peace, LucasArts. And those were, you know, now they're the domain of smaller studios. And Vulgar is kind of a throwback to Capcom's Black Tiger, a little bit of Ghosts and Goblins, and a little bit of Taito's Rastan, where those games where you were this lone, intrepid warrior, and you're handed, you know, you're given a sword or an axe, and you solve all the world's problems by slicing everything to shit. So Vulgar comes from... which I like to do. May have to axe this whole segment. Anyway, no, Vulgar comes from Crazy Viking Studios. Some people may think they're located in Valhalla, but they claim to be from Kirkland, Washington. Last year, their Kickstarter, which was successfully funded for almost $40,000, it shows the team's aim. They want to return players to this era where, you know, there were these parallax scrolling games that were tough, never cheap, and this hand-drawn art really kind of tickled our optical receptors. So in the early build of Vulgar...
Wait, what? Did it tickle you? What?
It tickled me in my eyes. My eyes. Anyway, in the early build that I played of Vulgar... The beginning, you asked me about this. There's a little bit of speech recalling Altered Beast's famous battle cry. What does it say at the beginning of the game?
Raise Warrior.
Raise Warrior? Rise Warrior? Anyway, he gets turned from they're gonna hate us for that. He gets turned into a skeleton back to this into this ass kicking threat that looks like a 16-bit version of the Techno Viking. You know, he's blonde, he's got the twin braided beard, muscles, and this.
Yeah, but you totally ruined that. You were supposed to do the grunt he does.
Rawr! Is that good? He's got a really large sword, which most people could never probably pick up. So anyway, for this version, you immediately counter two types of color-coded enemies. There are the green guys, which are sword fodder. You can slice through them with a single slash. And then you have the blue guys, and those require two. And if you approach the game like you're playing the old Kung Fu Hero, your ass is going to be handed to Asgard. So you got to learn a few tricks. One involves the old crouch and stick move, and that is, and the other, I should say, is accomplished by holding up on the stick, and I'll talk about the controls in a second, and that unleashes a javelin, which can either cut through enemies or creates this little stepladder, which allows Vulgar to climb up a wall. And even though he has this tool, it's not a puzzler, okay? So more along the lines of a arcade game circa 1986, 1987. There was a section that caused a little bit of Prinny, You Can Be a Hero grief, because Vulgar, he can double jump, but he can't quite tweak his trajectory in the air, at least for me. So this is old school. You'll errantly jump on spikes until you kind of learn the nuances of navigation. So after passing a few of these baddies, you find some other threats. There's things like spiders, there's giant bumblebees, there's snakes that kind of dart back and forth, and your favorite, those pollen spewing plants.
Yeah, oh god, I hated them with passion.
The type of things that would give the Belmont family nightmares. You just throw a spear at them, and they're pretty much eliminated. But anyway, as promised, I'll mention the controls. PC players, you guys may want to use your office equipment to move Vulgar around, but I'll stick with the Crazy Vikings built-in gamepad support, which is instantly recognized. I plugged in three different gamepads, and it recognized them by name. Stick in hand, the only blemish I noticed that occasionally getting on the old rope down felt like Castlevania, where, remember in Castlevania, you could either walk forward or climb up the stairs. That dilemma was a little bit tricky trying to engage one path over the other. But much of the game is in the timing, combat's in the timing. With practice, you can take on things like there's these frogs that move like the mermen, or is it fishmen from Castlevania? And then there's
you're kind of too serious right now. Just to let you know that.
How can you be serious? We're talking about mermen. Is mermen even a word? I know there's mermaids. Anyways,
the game is awesome, guys.
Too serious. There's oysters that toss pearls at you. They're mean. Okay, so less seriousness. Let's move on. Winners. This week's winners.
Yes. The wieners.
We have some wieners. A Super House of Dead Ninja giveaway, and the first two winners, Demon's Crest and also Shift, also receive a copy of Cognition. Okay, so we also have Garth Vader.
Yay! Doctor.
And finally, last but not least, White Mage. Okay, so once again, the names, guys. Demon's Crest, Shift, Garth Vader, Bento Boxer, White Mage. If that is your name, contact me, editor, E-D-I-T-O-R, at techtech-gaming.com. Okay, congratulations, and I will send you the code ASAP. That wraps things up for this week's Indie Outlook.
Are you nervous again?
I'm always nervous. I was more nervous.
Running over your words or something. What's up with that?
Beep, beep.
That's myself running over. Okay.
Now, you know, what, I have got to say something about Boulder. I was really surprised. No. I just got to say something. I played the game, and seriously, I was blown away at how good it was, because it's not just your typical arcade kind of game.
Yeah.
The fact that it includes a lot of new mechanics, as you were kind of trying to explain, and I kind of got bored in a way. But No, it's an amazing game, and yes, guys, I will strongly suggest you to please look them up and at least give them a try.
So that's this week's Indie Outlook. Wait, I'll listen to the rest of the show. See you guys in 2 weeks. Bye.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
You guys ready for some trivia?
Bring it on.
Willing and able.
I did some
force. Forgot to do trivia this week.
No. Would I ever?
Just the way you said that.
This week. And believe it or not, we're going to talk about Punch-Out.
Ooh. Whoa, weird.
Yeah. Wow, real weird. So
I am already running behind Doc.
I'm already feeling a little racist.
Number one.
The Botchamania soundboard.
Number one in the sanitized NES version of Punch-Out! 2 exclamation points. You knew him as Soda Popinski, the handlebar mustache monstrosity from Moscow. And yet, name his original arcade moniker. Is it A, Vodka Drinkinski? B, Vodka Drunkinski? C, Miguel Matalov? Or D, the Cesar of Carnage?
Soda Popinski. I gotta be honest, I really didn't, you know, aside from like the Nintendo PlayChoice 10, mm-hmm. I really didn't know that Punch-Out got an arcade.
Yeah, it did.
Release. I actually
a little Mac on the NES, you could see him, but in the arcade, I don't even know if it was a little Mac, but it was a wireframe figure that you could see through. I still
Yeah, and that always seemed more advanced somehow. Like, wow,
it was like Tron or something. Yeah.
Polygons.
I think yeah. Okay, so
it is Vodka Drug. Wait, there were two. Hold on.
Drinkinski or Drunkinski?
I'm going to say Vodka Drunkinski. I know it's one of those.
I'm going to say Vodka Drinkinski, just to be different and possibly pull ahead.
And the winner is Jeremy Vodka
Drunkinski.
Number two,
it's totally tasteless.
And odorless. Number two, before Punch-Out! Was released for the SNES here in the United States, it was sold as a golden cartridge in Japan. Name the final boss, who is also the boss of the original arcade game. Is it A, Super Dreamer, B, Mr. Dream, C, Super Macho Man, or D, King Hippo?
Ooh.
And I don't know.
Part of me wants to pick the Macho Man because it's the Macho Man, but I don't know if that's going to be right. Oh, what the hell? I believe in the Macho Man.
I'm going to do a
Slim Jim right now.
I'm going to snap right in. Actually, I thought that was the Kool-Aid Man for just a minute, but what is the difference? Someone needs to do those side by side. I mean, I've never seen Macho Man and Kool-Aid Man in the same room together. That's all I'm saying. So Mr. Dream was the after they got rid of Mike Tyson. So I doubt that. I don't think that I never heard of him being in a previous game. I don't know the answer to this, but I'm gonna guess King Hippo because he's a king, so he's like the last, like final guy.
Mm-hmm. So but you punch him and his pants fall down.
Yeah. Well, it was on his belly. He had a little piece of tape. Yeah. Correct answer. It's all tied up. 1-1 because Blue got it. Macho Man.
Oh, the Macho Man, he gave his life to prevent the rapture, and now he saves me during trivia. Oh, I can dig it.
Did he? It wasn't the Macho Man, though, was it?
No, it wasn't really.
No, just some macho guy. Okay.
Yeah, super macho.
Some other macho dude.
Yes, dressed in pink. Number three, while Wii owners received Punch-Out for the virtual console in 2007, Platinum Nintendo Club members got a special treat, a game which pitted Little Mac against what challenger? Is it A, Doc Lewis, B, Don Flamenco, C, Great Tiger, or D, Von Kaiser?
I can answer this question definitively because I actually had the opportunity to get it during the Platinum Reward Club Nintendo giveaway thingy, and then I opted for the hat.
Hold on, I don't know the answer, so I'm going to guess because it all sounds vaguely familiar to me. I'm going to say Don Flamenco.
Okay.
And I am going to say it was, what was his name? Doc Lewis? Was it?
The definitive answer. Don't quite know his name. Yes, correct answer. Blues in the lead. Doc Lewis.
Yes.
Punch Out champ. Okay, number four. Punch Out received a little scene spinoff in the U.S. and was the last coin op that the company independently developed and released. Name it. What was that Punch-Out spinoff? Was it A, street boxing, B, arm wrestling, C, kickboxing, or D, bear huggers take it to the mat?
Wow, one of these things is not like the others.
Bear hugger.
Rawr.
I know bear hugger was a character I think was in the Super NES version because I remember the announcer actually announcing his name. Bear hugger!
I feel like an arm wrestling game needs to be the answer to a trivia question one day. And I feel like this is the day.
Jeremy, you're taking it over the top.
I didn't actually... You know, whenever I think of arm wrestling, you know what I think of? I think of Superman 2. Was it Superman 2? When Superman arm wrestles that dude in that bar in the snowy place and he, like, breaks his hand off. Do you remember that?
Oh, crap!
Doesn't bone or something come out of the guy's hand?
Is that Superman?
It seems like he's evil. I can't remember if that's... Maybe he's evil Superman. Maybe it's Superman 3.
Mm. I was thinking about the arm wrestling from Shenmue 2.
Anyway, it just freaks me out. Right now.
I'll go ahead and just say bear hugger.
Bear hugger.
Bear hugger.
It's all tied up. Correct answer. Arm wrestling.
Yes. Oh, shit.
Yes. Number five, the original coin-op featured a few cameos in the fight crowd. Named Punch-Outs. Most famous two spectators: A. Popeye and Olive Oil, B. Donkey Kong and Mario, C. Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr., or D. That Duck Hunt dog along with Pauline. Does he have a name?
Which version?
The arcade version, the coin op, the original coin op arcade version. Punch Out! 2 exclamation points! Give me an answer.
The original arcade version.
Who was in the crowd?
Part of me wants to say it's the Punch-Out dog and Pauline because it would be so like uniquely obscure that it would be perfect.
Mm-hmm. I don't feel like they'd have a dog in the audience though.
Kinda. I could see it in the crowd of like a Megaton Punch from Kirby's Superstar.
I'm gonna say Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr.
Oh, father and son.
Good. Yeah, it's a nice night out. After that, it's strippers and booze and.
Okay, I gotta be honest.
And bananas.
I hate to do this during a tie game. I don't want to agree with my opponent, but I kind of think so because isn't Mario the ref?
I'm not going to answer.
That's a great point.
I'll agree with Jeremy.
Still a tied game. Correct answer: Donkey Kong and Mario.
Oh, wait, this is weird. Hold on.
Wait. We got a tiebreaker. Hold that thought. God. Okay. Oh, so, number six, my tiebreaker. While any gamer worth their weight in salt will remember Punch-Out, they may not know what the cartridge, the NES version, is famous for. What Nintendo first? A, being the first cartridge with a battery to save a game. B, Punch-Out was the first time gamers heard Mario speak. C, Punch-Out was the first 128K cartridge. Or D, the game was the first Power Glove compatible title.
Ooh, that Power Glove.
Yeah, rock 'em, sock 'em.
I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to say that is the first time they heard Mario speak, because he does say fight at the beginning of the fight. And I can't remember any other game having Mario voiced.
It's a me.
Mario.
Now, at first I was thinking battery, but it doesn't use a battery because it uses a password system.
Yeah.
So it can't be
Wait
that.
A minute, why am I helping you?
Well, I think what the spoiler, I think it's gonna boil down to me possibly agreeing with you, but I would then think that it would be a Punch-Out, but Punch-Out seems like something that would have come later because I think there were some lame-ass Power Glove games that came before that. I had a Power Glove, and it was kind of lame-ass. But did you guys ever have a Power Glove where you had to hang that stupid sensor on the side of your TV?
No, I never had a Power Glove.
Really? It used these, like, sound things. It, like, triangulated via, I don't even know what it was, but you had this, like, three-part...
Made like, little noises.
Yeah, well, super high. Like, you couldn't, yeah, it's like, oh god, I want to kill myself. I think that's how it worked, though. I think it did it with that. But anyhow,
the duck.
A submarine lands in your front yard.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Torpedo.
Or let's see, what's the one that we haven't addressed yet?
128K.
128K. It doesn't seem like it was that great a game.
Well, it has a lot of sprites in it.
Yeah,
not that I'm trying to convince you of something else.
Whenever I go and look at it, though, I'm always like, oh, that's kind of gross looking. I mean, I could go with that, but is it the first one? I don't know, maybe. We might as well make this interesting, right?
Right.
I'll go with that. First 128K cartridge.
We have a winner.
Oh, no.
The winner is you, Blue.
Yes!
Good job.
Oh!
First time we heard Mario speak. You got it.
It was just that one fight thing that just stuck in my head
It wasn't the voice that we're used to.
I wonder who it was.
Fight.
Yeah. Wasn't, what's his name, Charles?
Marchnet.
Yeah, wasn't him. Anyway, we got one question, SOCOM Sam. He calls us names here. Hey, you nostalgic twits. What console do you have the best memories of?
Ooh, good question.
What console, guys?
It's got to be the NES, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I think because NES, all my friends had one. I had one. You know, we'd get different games, swap them around. I had a little intercontinental exchange going on with a friend who was in the military who's, he moved to Germany, and so we would actually swap games with each other. It was expensive, too. We'd swap games with each other through the mail, and it was pretty cool. I mean, then after that, you know, you got to the Sega and the Super Nintendo, and you kind of fractured, and people, you know, friendships torn asunder, you know, brother against brother.
60-bit high definition.
Yeah, it was like we had, you know.
Stereo, yeah, versus blast processing.
We were exiled from Eden at that point.
Mode 7 reigns supreme.
Wouldn't it be the Tower of Babel?
It could be the Tower. There are many metaphors that might be. For the Sodom below, you know, we had.
What was going on?
The Sodom.
I'm kidding. That's Jeremy.
That was a BioShock reference, by the way. If you didn't get that, the Sodom below. But yeah, I would have to say NES.
Okay, Jeremy or Blue.
Well, you know, I had an NES too, and I still have a NES. I think I got a second one. I want to say, or I never got rid of my original. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, I had a lot of games for it back in the 90s, but, you know, like I mentioned with my new release pick last week, I sold off a lot of games to fund my PlayStation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I try to go back to play NES games now, it's like, you know, I spend more time trying to get the damn cartridge working, you know, and mm-hmm. I also have trouble, you know, have to clean the pins on the system, you know, in the cartridge slot. You know, I've taken apart both of my NESs, and one I can't quite put back together just the way I really want it to. Perhaps I shouldn't.
But see, that's like the essence of nostalgia. You can't have it now. You only had it then.
But, you know, I mean, honestly, it's like, I had NES game, you know, an NES, and, you know, I did like it and stuff like that, but, you know, my heart belongs to the Super Nintendo. It's like, you know, it's, I'm looking at it right now. I got my Super Nintendo Junior or 2 or whatever hooked up right in my entertainment center. And I also have a copy of Super Fire Pro Wrestling Queen Special in it right now. And, you know,
under
it's
your
like,
pillow.
My fondest memories have always been the Super Nintendo, because, you know, it's like I remember, you know, trying to, you know, get through Super Mario World, and one kind of embarrassing memory, where I have a couple, and, you know, they're quick, so I'll share them all. You know, we're playing Bowser's Castle in Super Mario World, and I recreated the Koopa Copter with a computer monitor box and a couple of pieces of paper. You know, aww. I drew like the clown face on it and mm-hmm. taped it to the side of the box. Mm-hmm. And I had a whole bunch of stuffed animals, and I'd randomly, like, you know, throw them at some of my friends while they were trying to play the game or watch the game or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I moved a little bit too much and went over backwards, smashed my head into the piano.
Oh, man.
And I'm sitting there. I'm like, I can't remember. I was a complete wuss, so I probably cried because of how hard the hit was.
So this was just this past couple weeks, right?
Right. Did the stuffed animals go everywhere, like at the end of Sonic?
When he
steps on the thing, yeah.
Yeah.
They just start jumping out. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and you know, I crack, you know, my head, and it's hurting like hell. And all of my friends are just paying attention to the game. You know, yeah. I'm sitting there, tears running down my cheeks, and there's something like, oh, look at that jump. And, yeah, that was probably about the last time the Koopa Copter ever got used.
Oh, the last time the Koopa Copter.
We're going to go out on the song from Cats. Memories. Speaking of Super Nintendo, I remember when Capcom used to have little kiosks in the mall. I waited there, and I think I anteed up, must have been 50 or 60 bucks for Street Fighter 2 for the SNES, and got that, and I remember my friends came over, and that was the first game that we played probably for a good 12 hours straight, and I remember getting calluses on my fingers and still wanting to play. But that's probably not my favorite. The greatest memory was the one import console I got before the U.S. launch, and that was the Dreamcast. I found a little place that they were selling the console. It was fairly close to the U.S. launch, so it was maybe only $30 or $40 more, and, you know, some of the games, and I could not resist. Back then it was Sega Rally Championship. I couldn't resist that racer, and picked up a few other games. Don't remember them too much, but got that, and then I remember trying to, right before the U.S. launch, trying to trade that in. And I told the guy, hey, this is a Japanese Dreamcast, and he said, oh, that's okay, we'll trade it in. We'll just, you know, hit the switch on it and make it make it go back to English. And I didn't tell him, like, you can't really do that. That's hardwired. But he gave me basically enough money so that I could buy U.S. one and at least a game or two on that. So $9.99 was a good day for me.
Right? I'll never forget the seeing, like, the in Dreamcast magazine the promo for Shenmue. It's like, yeah. It's just seeing like this, like, one page advert. It might have been two pages actually, but it was just like, you know, talking about all these things like the QTEs and stuff like that. It got me so hyped for that game, and you know, I went out and I think I got it right at launch. Mm-hmm. And you know, I know that game takes a lot of shit for do you know where any sailors are? I'm looking for some sailors and other voice acting gems. But I still enjoy that game to this day, you know, driving the forklift around the docks and stuff like that. I mean, that really was a fantastic game. And, you know, I need to go back and finish Shenmue 2 one of these days, too.
Well, that's our show. Jeremy, you want to take us out?
I might take us out.
Keyboard Cat, take us home.
That's it. So if you like what you heard, you might like what we write. You can check us out on the interwebs at www.tech-gaming.com. There are reviews and news and some ads there that you may want to click on. You can also...
Before we go for the paper.
You can friend us on Facebook. Apparently we have some nice new headers there that have been put there for your enjoyment. Please to enjoy those.
Headers. Go for the headers.
There's headers there. We might be on Google Plus if Google Plus still exists. Does anybody use Google Plus?
I've gotten two new followers or whatever they're held.
Know what they're called on Google Plus. That's stupid.
Google Plus is like Google Plus is just like the I think it's like the redheaded stepchild of social media. I mean, does anybody use it?
Well, here's what I heard. I heard that it's the number two social network behind Facebook. I heard that. The information is a few months old, but somebody must be using it. Probably bots, I think, are using Google Plus. But
it's bigger than LinkedIn.
It's definitely more useful than LinkedIn. So ignore all of those. Follow us instead on Twitter. You can follow the site and Robert Desert Eagle Allen at tech_gaming.
You have nearly 60,000 followers, I might add.
It's down to 58.
Down to 58? Aww. Damn.
So bolster those numbers, people. If you're here, if you're within earshot of this, you should be on Twitter following Robert Desert Eagle Allen. You should also be following my compatriot, Eric Blue Swim, at Blue Swim.
I only have 360 followers. Somebody please try to make me get up to maybe 361, maybe?
That might be a little bit generous. A few people can unfollow Blue. Those people can follow instead Sage Morris Green at Samarage. You can check in on me every once in a while at Jeremy_Lamont.
And by all means, say hi to us. We like interacting with people. If you're nice and friendly and like video games, please say hi. If you're going to be a douchebag, you can just follow us.
We're fun. Close. And we post funny links.
And don't forget Psy at Psy. OMG. WTF.
I thought it was Say.
It is Psy.
That is not Psy. That is Say.
You're going to be in such trouble.
It's true. I know.
There's going to be a beatdown. Follow us all on Twitter. Learn more.
Rest in peace, Blue Swim.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. We really are getting close to the season finale, to the series finale, if I'm getting killed off now.
There can be only one.
Good night, everybody.